A young man began to share a story telling me what had transpired in his journey of faith. And it was interesting because he had spent his young lifetime trying to process his present problems without ever looking for the future promise that God had for him. And as a result, he found himself struggling relationally in his own relationships and with his children, with his wife, with his future, because it was apparent that what was the focus of his life was centered in what was going on right then. And you see, oftentimes what happens to us is we allow our problems of today to steal the promise of tomorrow. And as a result, we end up processing life in a way God never intended. As a young man began to share a story, he began to share about what had transpired. And he came to a crossroads when he realized that what God had done for him was built to last. It was something that he did not have to do himself. Instead, God had done it for him. And as a result, his faith became a living faith. It's interesting what he said to me. He said, you know, I've had all these goals all my life that I never thought would be accomplished. But when I surrendered my future to the one who'd ordered out my steps in life, my whole life changed. He said, I've already seen more goals accomplished than I ever dreamed would happen in such a short span of time. You see, in 9 months, he had watched what could happen versus 9 years. 9 years he spent processing as a young adult, thinking, okay, this is the way this works. And then 9 months ago, he surrendered. And he realized that what he needed in his life was that ever-present affirmation of the great God who knew his name, who could work in his life. And so today, as you think about your own journey of faith, here's my question. When it comes to who you are, do you find yourself knowing that your faith is built to last? That your faith will carry you forward no matter what? That nothing will get in the way of his plan for your journey of faith? Because if that's the case, then you come on a great Sunday. Because today we see what it is that happens inside of us when we have to endure at times, but the endurance is affirmed in the midst of our discipline, and that discipline shapes our future so that we're able to see that everything has come together in order for us to accomplish what God only can do. And you see, the truth of the matter is, if he can do it, it'll last forever. If we do it, it only lasts for a season. And what you discover very quickly is this. He only breaks to bless because his intent is for you and I to understand how to live out our lives in such a way that when people see us, they realize that we have understood the cross. And here's what I want you to see. Coming back to a theme we have echoed through this entire series. It takes a cross to write a story. It takes a cross to elevate a story that makes it worth reading. Because here's what happened. If we become sacrificial, we still are minuscule at the point of sacrifice compared to what God has done for us. And so all of a sudden, we're sitting in church and we begin to ponder in our own life. Have I spent my life sacrificing without realizing the real significance of the sacrifice God has made for me? And it's a transition point in our hearts and minds when we all of a sudden go, you know what? I don't want to do it my way. I want to do it God's way. And when I do it God's way, something happens inside of me. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. I want to ask you a question. Have you ever given up on something prematurely? Have you ever said, you know what? It is not worth it. I can't get there. I'm not going to do it because it seems to be too overwhelming. I've met people who've done that with their faith, where because the challenges of what they were dealing with, they ended up setting their faith aside. And watch this carefully. If your faith is on the sideline, you never play the game of life the way God intended. And so what you discover is this, and watch this carefully. When I see the future, I can deal with the problems of the present. But if I can't see what it is that God intends, then I struggle processing through the present life. And so what do? I find myself giving up, thinking, you know, I would have done that, I could have done that, and I should have done that, but I didn't, because I let something get in the way of that. And here's what you discover. In a living faith, you discover how to set aside everything that doesn't matter in order to encounter what does matter. And so my challenge to you today is to think about your own journey. Think about where you are in your walk, in your faith, in your diligence, in your discipline. Think about how you endure. Because today we find ourselves in Hebrews chapter 12. And it is here that after echoing all these words about all these amazing people in Hebrews chapter 11, he comes to this place where he says, we have this great crowd of witnesses watching us run the race. All those who have lived out their faith in such an amazing way. And I want you to contrast the first question I ask you with the second one. Because just like we sometimes give up prematurely, have you ever found yourself in a place, or can you think of that moment, where you stayed so focused that as you zeroed in on it, you stayed committed to it until it was completed? I had the privilege of knowing some folks who live here in Atlanta, and they came to Christ as young adults here in Atlanta, and they had parents who lived in another part of the world, and they made a commitment to pray that, in particular, that her parents would come to know Christ. And recently, the mother falling ill, the daughter went to visit, and when she got there, she realized that what was happening was it was an opportunity not just to see her mom who was sick, but her dad who was searching. For 25 years, she prayed. She prayed that what would transpire in her dad's heart, that he would come to know Christ, that Jesus would become everything to him. And here's what I want you to kind of get in your mind as we dig into Hebrews chapter 12. As you come to the place where you don't give up, but you center in on what it is he wants to do in you, you can watch him complete the story that he has written in your life. And it's all anchored in our understanding of the cross. And so, as we find ourselves in Hebrews chapter 12, let's look at a few verses here and realize that in this text, there are two key distinctive words, endurance and discipline. In other words, our ability to process through things that are challenging, because anything of value comes with a price. So it is not some cheap grace that does not connect you into a greater purpose. It is amazing grace that connects you into God's purpose. And there's a big difference. Because if you make his grace cheap, you lessen the impact of your story. Because you won't look at the cross. You will only look at your challenges. And so in Hebrews chapter 12, let's begin reading verse 1. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and it sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Verse 4, you have not yet resisted the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as son. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good so that we may share his holiness. And look at verse 11. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. When you read this text, you realize that here the writer of Hebrews gives to us an understanding that because he loves us, he's always making sure we are in shape, that we're positioned to accomplish what he intends. And he uses the earthly family as an illustration of the heavenly Father who disciplines for holiness. And as a result, there's this very distinct parallel that he brings together with how we endure and how we are disciplined, all of it to accomplish one thing. And that is that we would come to this place that he notes here in verse 11, that we would yield the peaceful fruit of righteousness. And what is that? That is a life of purpose and power because it's connected to holiness and direction. And what I want you to see today is this. Discipline always leads us in a direction. God does not discipline us just for the sake of knowing that he can. He disciplines us because he knows we need it. And so today, as you think about that, look with me just for a moment. And when you think about endurance, when you think about, he uses, the writer of Hebrews uses this word endurance over and over and over again. Look at when you look at that word, it has to do with the ability to be able to look beyond the immediate. In other words, to look beyond what's right there in front of you. And beyond the immediate, to see the greater purpose that God has for our lives completed. In other words, sometimes we have to go through something in order to experience what he has for us on the other side. And what we do is as we endure, something begins to happen inside of us. Because the endurance sets in motion our ability to accomplish his task that he has for our lives. So look, if you would, just kind of notice in several places here what happens. Because when our faith is centered in endurance, it is an example of living faith. And what I want you to see today is this. When our faith is centered in the right thing, then we have the ability to have the most amazing and productive lives. And so it may be you're here and you realize something. Maybe you don't find yourself balanced at the point of your faith. Perhaps you struggle at being able to pursue him in a way that he intended. And then you come and you begin to think through your own journey and go, you know what? I want to be somebody who can endure whatever it is that comes at me because there's something there that he has for me. And I'll show you something else in just a moment related to endurance. But I want you to look at these verses, how many of them point out this. And in chapter 12, verse 1, notice he says, latter part of that verse, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Now, if you see this, you realize something. This is the same type parallel that you find throughout the New Testament. It's a race. It's to run fast. And my little granddaughter, Nora Grace, she likes to be chased all the time. And she'll say to me, Gaga, will you chase me? And to be honest with you, she's faster than I am. And so it's not always fun to chase her. But the other day, we were out in the green space beside our house. And I'll say, 1, 2, 3, go. And she starts running. I just stand there. And she comes back and stands in front of me and says, Gaga, you got to run. And what she was really saying was, it's no fun if you don't chase me. And what I want you to see today is this. You need to chase after, watch this, chase after a faith that allows you to endure challenges, to be disciplined in the midst of life, and to experience an amazing life. And when you do that, you run the race that God's put before you. Look on, though, in verse 2, what does he say? Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Look at verse 3. Uses this same word. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. What's he saying here? You are going to have situations that if you're not careful, weariness will take you away from the wisdom you need to live your life. And because I promise you this, there's not a person in here that doesn't have a challenge that can make them weary. There's not a person in here that doesn't have some issue that could steal their joy. Watch this. Misdirect their purpose. Cause them to be overwhelmed. And you see, what you discover here is that the writer of Hebrews says it this way. You don't want anything, be it your employer, be it your job, be it your marriage, be it your friends, be it your situation, be it your challenges, be it all those things. You don't want any of those things to get in the way of you experiencing what God intended. Because what you discover is you got to run this race because you don't want to get weary and lose heart. In other words, and when you lose heart, by the way, what he's saying here is you lose the energy that a focused life can give you. And a living faith that is built to last energizes who you are, where you're able to go, you know what? I can see where God wants me to go. I can see what it is he wants to do. And today, as you think about that, as we think about Easter and we think about what it is God has done for us, we ought to be energized by the cross. We ought to be energized by the empty tomb. All those things set in motion for us something that we can't do for ourselves. There's something powerful about that. There's something amazing. And look on, if you would, there's one other verse I want you to see. In verse 7 of chapter 12, it is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? So he talks here about enduring. All right? So turn back to Hebrews chapter 10 just for a moment. Look at a couple verses here so that you understand the significance of how important it is that we don't let up at the point of enduring in the midst of whatever it is we're facing. Which, by the way, if you have an easy life, you probably don't have a holy life. Because what happens is, watch this, when he puts something before you, it is never easy. It is always challenging. And the challenge he puts before you is to cause you to go, you know what, I've got to put these pieces together in order to understand what he ultimately wants to do. And what transpires is you find yourself in Hebrews 10. Look at verse 32, if you would, with me. And notice what he said. But remember the former days when, watch this, after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of suffering. Have you ever seen somebody who lives so wicked but seems to have it all together and have a great life? I mean, you see them and say, man, look at how they live. Look at how they operate. I knew of a guy years ago who was dramatically successful. He was so successful, he believed that he could have a girlfriend in every town. And so he had three towns in which his business operated. And in each town, each one of the girls lived in multi-million dollar homes. And so he had three homes, three town. And whenever he would travel to this town, she would be his friend. And whenever he would travel to another place, that girl would be his friend. The only problem was he got old and he got sick. And all of a sudden, the story of his life began to unravel because he had never been enlightened to truth. And what I want you to see today is this. When you and I are enlightened to truth, by the way, that gentleman died a miserable death. And here's what I want you to see. People live thinking they can do what they want to, when they want to, how they want to, to whoever they want to. Remember this, God is not mocked. What a man sows, what a woman sows, they will also reap. So if you're sitting here thinking, you know what, I need that good life. Just remember this, the good life seldom becomes the great life. Because the good life says, I control all the variables. The great life says, he controls all the variables. Who would want to live a good life when they could have a great life given by God? So he says here in verse 32 that once you, in other words, here's what he said, once the light went off, you had to go through some things. And by the way, what kind of faith do you have that doesn't go through things? Look at verse 36, chapter 10, one other verse. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. You see, what the writer of Hebrews over and over and over again echoes is when you are willing to pay the price, you get to experience the prize. And the prize that God has for you is to know that you're in the will of God. And I'm going to tell you, you can't put a dollar value, you can't put enough breath in your lungs, you can't breathe enough to be able to put any price tag on knowing you're in His will. For example, I can honestly say to you that I feel so centered in His will for my life at this moment that it's the most amazing season of my life. And I don't know if it's a product of us being in the next stage of life where little grandchildren are in our world, but I walked in the house yesterday, and when I walked in, Levi was there, his parents were there as well, and when I walked up to him, all of a sudden a smile broke across his face. And if any of you are friends with me on Facebook, I post one grandchild every other hour over most days in order to emphasize that they're really a new part of my story. But you know what blew my mind was that little guy, he doesn't know too much yet, but he does know the voice of his grandfather. And it said to me that I want to make sure that my grandchildren discover very young in life that God has a plan that is better than our plan. And it's my prayer for Nora and Audrey and Levi and every child in our church that as they endure things, though they will go through difficult things, they'll go through the rejection that transpires. That young guy who was telling me this story this week about his life, as soon as he got his life centered in God's purpose, anchored to the cross, understood how the story was written, as soon as that happened, his child came to him, 9 years old, and said, "Daddy, I don't have any friends, and I don't like life. I'm sad. How do I find happiness?" Now, I want you to imagine for a second. All of a sudden, place in his hands is the heart of his child. And what I want you to see today is this. Sometimes we do the same thing to God. We go to him, we don't have any friends. We don't have anybody who understands where we are. And watch this carefully. When you isolate, watch this. When you isolate your story, you lose the power of all of us coming together to encourage you in the midst of it. And so if you're here today and you got dilemmas that you're dealing with and dynamics you're dealing with, you ought to let somebody else share that story with you to encourage you in your journey of faith. And by the way, most people are miserable because they refuse to endure what is absolutely significant in order for them to become who they're supposed to be. Because when a person says, "You know, I ain't going that way. I don't want to do all that." What they say is, "I'm going to do it my way instead of God's way." And by the way, we have so many in our culture who determine that I'm only going to do it the easy way because that's how I want to live my life. And listen carefully, you don't want the easy way, you want the holy way. And that's what Hebrews chapter 12 does for it. So what does it do here? And when you read this 12th chapter, verses 1 through 11, you find five building blocks. I'm going to give them to you because they may help you build the right foundation so that as you face life, you'll be able to move forward the way he intended. In verse 1, he says, "Let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us." Building block number 1, learn how to identify anything that encumbers or entangles. Now, you'll notice he refers here to the sin. And the writer of Hebrews is taking and in all likelihood, isolating the most significant thing that gets us in the bad spots in life. And it has to do with unbelief or doubt. So the writer of Hebrews is saying, if you would quit doubting, you can have this amazing race. But if you doubt, it's going to always encumber you. It's always going to entangle you. And as you read these verses, you realize that it's here, this idea of being encumbered, it's like carrying this giant burden on your shoulders. Let me give you an example of how that works. You grow up in a family where you don't get what you need. I'm not talking about material thing. You don't get the nurture, the love, the encouragement, the blessing. Instead, you get expectations you can never meet up to. Then all of a sudden, you start getting encumbered by that. Whenever you interview for a job, you hear the words echoed by your family, your parents. "Oh, you'll never measure up. You'll never be able to do that. You'll never be able to accomplish that task." And all of a sudden, it starts encumbering you. And so instead of operating, excelling in life, you end up missing the life that God has for you. So today, think about what would happen if you start building your life around identifying anything, watch this, that weighs you down or wraps its vine around your feet to trip you. Because what he's saying here is, you get entangled and something gets in the way of what you're about, you end up missing out in learning how to endure. And you'll notice he talks there about this whole idea of endurance in verse 1. You run with endurance the race that is set before us. And here he's talking about the steady determination that makes you make sure you keep running no matter what. You stay steady about it. So building block number 1, you identify anything that encumbers you, anything that entangles you. Building block number 2 is you learn, in verse 2 he says, fixing your eyes on Jesus. And this is so critical to building out a life that God can use. You have to learn how to fix your eyes on Jesus. You've got to learn how to run your race with your eyes on him, not others. Have you ever found yourself discouraged because you looked at someone else instead of running your race focused on him? Look at verse 2. Notice how he says it there. Fix your eyes on Jesus. He's the author and he's the perfecter of your faith. Here's what he's saying. There's only one guy who completes your story. Why would you let somebody else write a chapter in your story that can't finish the story? You got to be wise enough to go, you know what? I'm not going to let that transpire. Instead, what I'm going to do is I am going to run my race with my eyes on Jesus. And I'm going to tell you what happens when you do that. Everything else is in the peripheral. It is not in the line of focus. You zero in on that. As I told you, we've been blessed with these three little grandkids, and I'm one of those people that if my phone rings and I'm driving, I answer it, "Hey, how you doing?" And it was interesting because the very first time that I began, one day I had to drive all three. I had all three grandkids in the car. And it's interesting what the Lord said to me. Never pick your phone up again. I want to ask you, do you know how hard that is? If you're used to just always instantaneously connecting to whoever calls, whoever. And I'm telling you, it gets tested by my own children. They call me when I have their kids. When one day I was helping one of my children with something, and so my phone kept ringing. I had one of them in my car, and I couldn't answer it. So I finally had to pull over in a parking lot. Pull over, park my car, and said, "Hello." And I wanted to make sure I'm cool. I'm not talking on this phone because these treasures are with me. And I tell you what I discovered. Better to put down your phone and pick up the heart of your children and your grandchildren than to just be connected all the time. But it's a commitment that I made, and I intend to live it out whenever they're in my car. Now, if they're not in the car, you want to call me and invite me to lunch, no problem. I'm ready, all right? But when they're in the car, no lunch dates. So here he says, run your race with your eyes on Jesus. Verse 3, building block number 3. Notice what he says here. He says in verse 3, "For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you do not grow weary and lose heart." What happened to him at the latter part of verse 2 was he endured the cross, despising the shame, because the joy that was set before him was that you and I would have life. And what you see by way of building block that really allows us to have life and to build something that lasts is we recognize the true value of the cross. You see, it's easy to wear a chain around your neck that has a cross. It's different to wear it on your heart. I've met people who they can wear a cross and have a beautiful diamond necklace made out of the cross, but their choices do not parallel what they wear. And what happens here is Jesus ends up bearing our sin by wearing and going to the cross so that you and I could wear him in our hearts forever. Building block number 4, look at verse 4. "You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin." And I want you to see this because you could miss it if you're not careful. Obviously, no one else was going to the cross. Jesus had already done that. And what he's trying to say here, the writer's trying to say, is this: don't ever grow tired of the very best in life. In other words, don't ever grow tired saying, I don't mind missing what it is God has for me. You stay focused on what it is he has for your life, and you don't grow tired of that. Because if you don't grow weary, what happens? You grow wise. And the reason some people never get where God intended is they allow the weariness, watch this, the weariness of the world to steal the joy of the Lord. And I'm going to tell you, this world will make you weary. It will make you weary because we live in such an unbelievable day. Who would have ever thought so many different things would transpire in such a fast period of time, all of which could make us weary? But what we know is we know the guy who writes the whole story. We know what it is he intends to do. Who can take what is crooked and make it straight? Only the Lord. So you've got to be willing to never give up on the best. Building block number 5. What you discover is that when you begin to live out your life, in verse 5 he says, "And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you, a son. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord." And building block number 5 takes verses 5 through 11 and zeroes in on discipline. So I want you to think about this for a second. If I'm supposed to be built to last, I have to endure, and I have to be disciplined by God. In other words, he has to do certain things in me. Because the Bible says, "In me dwells no good thing." So what does he do? He takes and reckons with what it is that is in my journey that gets me away from his best, and he shapes my story into something that's worth reading. And if you don't have the cross in the middle of your story doesn't read well. But if he is in the middle of your story, anybody can read it and go, "You know what? Look at that amazing story. That amazing thing that only God could do." So all of a sudden in verse 5, he comes to this place where he and through verse 11, he starts dealing with this whole idea of discipline. We're going to talk about that just for a second. But here's what I want you to see by way of building block. You have to understand that discipline in our lives is there for one purpose, to direct us to holiness. Because if I take discipline the wrong way, then I misunderstand it. I grew up in a military home. My father was a very strict disciplinarian. He was very strict on everybody but himself. And his expectations of us were staggering. Because he had an expectation, for example, of my mother, that when he walked through the door of our home, supper would be on the table. I mean, that was his expectation. And if it wasn't, my mother would catch it from him for a long time. But the second thing he expected was for me to take his boots off. And before I went to bed, to shine them. You can't imagine how much I despise polish now. Because whenever I see, you know, and by the way, polish looks just like it did back when I was a kid. It's made by the same people. I keep hoping somebody else will produce some. But the truth is, it's the same polish box that comes in, that little metal thing, you flip the lid open. And I'll never forget one day, I was real busy, and my dad said to me, you know, look, son, I want you to shine these boots so I can see my face. You ever tried to shine something where you could actually see someone's face in it? Which, by the way, you will never see my shoes shine that way. You know what I have on, you know how I shine my shoes? I have one of those sponges. You ever seen them? And what you do is you take that sponge and you just wipe it on your shoe and it makes it look brand new, at least for a few minutes. And because the idea of polishing things does not get with me. I mean, it's just a part of my story. And I can remember thinking through, this discipline seems so useless. It doesn't seem to have purpose. And what happens in the writer of Hebrews, he tries to get across to it, that sometimes we do go through things that our parents put before us that may not matter. My dad, when I was a 16-year-old boy, he made me paint the eave of our house one summer. If you ever been in Fort Smith, Arkansas in the summer, it is so hot that it had a nickname. It started with H. It was a very hot place. And I can remember my dad said, son, I want you to paint this like you're going to live here all your life. Well, you know, the whole time I'm painting, never going to live here, never going to live here, never going to live here. Took me all summer to paint that. He'd come in and say, how much have you done? I said, oh, I've done a lot today. He said, let me see it. He'd walk out there, and he'd inspect it. And he said, looks like you didn't scrape that paint well right there. Well, at that time, I held the scraper. And I was thinking the whole time, I'm going to scrape you if you say one more word about this. Because it's interesting, he never lifted a finger. Let me tell you the difference. God doesn't lift a finger. He lifts a hand and places it on us to accomplish his purpose. It is always for something good. And so when you look at this text, he talks about what happens when we get discipline going on. And I want to just kind of quickly remind you of what discipline does. First of all, and think about this for a moment. First of all, discipline affirms ownership. In other words, God's not going to waste any time processing us through life in something if we're not a part of his world. And so if you're going through something challenging, it's an affirmation that you're owned by him. Discipline affirms ownership. But I love the fact that it's centered in goodness. It's centered in the goodness of God. Notice what he says in verse 10. For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. And don't you love the fact that discipline moves us toward goodness? But he also says here that discipline opens the door to holiness. When we get discipline, he starts moving us towards what it is he intends to do in our life. He moves us towards being holy. Be holy, for he is holy. Discipline also opens the door for us to be able to produce great fruit in our lives. I mean, you'll notice in verse 11 how he says it. That those who have been, the discipline you go through for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Now, watch this carefully. Here's what transpires. Sometimes he opens our world up to shape us in a way that we initially say, I don't want to live through this. I don't want to walk through this part of the journey. But he uses it all to move us forward. Because what does he want to do? He wants our hearts fixed on him. And today, I want you to think about what would happen if all of a sudden The cross became everything to you. Not a symbol around your neck, which, by the way, I have no problem you wearing those. But always remember this. What's on the outside should reflect what's on the inside. And here's what you see about the cross as we bring this message together. The cross opens our hearts to five amazing things. First of all, it opens us to an amazing life. We get to live in an amazing way. I love the fact that what God has done for me, I can never do for myself. And we live this amazing life because all of a sudden, we learn how to deal effectively with the obstacles of life. In other words, all of a sudden in the cross, we learn how to work through those things that are part of our story, that are obstacles, because we all have them. You see, for my father, I had to forgive him for a lot of things because my obstacle, and young in life, my obstacle was unforgiveness. What he did to my mother, what he did to our family, what he did to our lives, they had to forgive all that. And what you discover is this, no obstacle should steal away your opportunity. You ought to always be willing to look at the cross because the cross negates every obstacle, no matter what. When you live for the inside the cross, it opens our hearts also to understand sacrifice. In other words, we're able to go, you know what, I know what it is God wanted to do in my life. He wanted me to see what he would do and only he could do. He would sacrifice so that I could have peace, sacrifice so that I could have joy, sacrifice so that I could have purpose and meaning. When we come to the cross, we realize that it gives us something else that money can't buy. It gives us the ability to never give up. We don't have to give up because God has something for us. You see, he's built us to last, not just in this present life, but in the future into an eternal life. We never give up when we anchor ourselves in the cross. And finally, when we understand the cross, we learn how to accept discipline and let it become a part of our story. And so today I want to ask you a question when you think about your own journey. Are you built to last? Is your faith so strong that you can make it through no matter what? If that's the case, then something happens inside of you because you begin to experience what God intended. And maybe you're here today and maybe you find yourself needing to be in a place where the cross is lifted up. Maybe you find yourself in a place where you need hope beyond the despair of the moment. If you're here and you need to surrender yourself to him, you really have to ask yourself that same question. Are you built to last? The only way you're built to last is to give yourself to him. As we pray, you ask God to speak to your heart in an amazing way. Father, thank you that as we think about the cross and we think about endurance and we think about discipline, something powerful happened inside of who we are. We see you. And we see Jesus high and lifted up. And so, Lord, for anyone here who needs to surrender themselves to you, I just pray you speak to their heart. There may very well be an individual or a couple or a family that this needs to be home. They've waited long enough, Lord, and now they know this is where you want them to be. Lord, I pray you speak to hearts, move in lives, and let this invitation be a response to what it is you want to do that we could never measure in our own lives, but we can watch you do in a profound and amazing way. We endure, we experience discipline, we rejoice in the cross. And we give this all to you in Christ's name. Amen.